Stefan, the question you asked last, I almost asked the same thing. Because in some places we provision different things, not just internet. And another registry that we do, we would rather use XML over SOAP. But that has to do with the environment it's in is a SOAP environment. And that, so I was concerned looking at this too. I think that might be too heavyweight for the kind of interaction that's being described here. So I think it's more a matter of what you're building into, what you would layer it in. So I think it's a reasonable question too. Of course, I'm talking about EPP here. I'm going to, the agenda I have is, I'm going to talk a little bit about reverse map interfaces. And then a little bit about EPP and the number of registries, where EPP came from, DNSSEC and the number of registries, and then EPP's extension for DNSSEC, which came out, which is, I think it's a published RFC now. I know that I had the number, but I don't know if it was published yet. I'm talking a little bit about why passing DNSSEC data is kind of a special case, and then I have a quick demo that I will show to show some of the fact that we've actually done this kind of code already. From what I understand, this is how the world, or how data make it past. Let's see which end do I look into? Through APNIC. If I'm a holder of IP space and I have a DNS operation somewhere, I need to, for DNSSEC, and I'm not going to explain exactly what's flowing yet, but the data from DNSSEC has to flow back up the tree, ultimately to be in the into the zone somewhere else. Some people may go straight to an LIR or to a sub-LIR. Some may talk to the NAR. I guess I don't have a line from the NAR up there. But eventually, APNIC may have to get information about the delegation. So one thing to consider here is that with DNSSEC, we have all these new lines of communication are coming up, and we're going to have to send data back and forth that's not exactly simple to send back and forth. First thing, the EPP, the number of registries. EPP is defined in the IETF. It's, quite frankly, was designed for the ICANN shared registry model. It's mostly for domain names. If you look at the way it's defined now, it doesn't even pretend to be there for the number of registries. EPP is a basic client-server protocol for putting in requests, getting back responses. Now, when it comes to the RIRs case, it's not hard to imagine how this might be used in the RIRs. However, I wouldn't go out and say that RIRs should adopt EPP because what's in there today is not much, it's not bad, and this would change the world greatly. It would make things a little more smoothly with the domain names, but for the most part, I don't know that there's no real compelling reason to uplift the front end of a registry, RIRs for this. However, with DNSSEC coming out, there might be a case here where this putting DNSSEC data into the DNS, into the registries might benefit from using EPP. Now, there are other alternatives. I'm just bringing this up as a suggested course to look at. DNSSEC, it's defined again in these RFCs. The big thing here is that the parent of a delegation, we have parent and child terminology, the parent's going to have to hold a DS record. A DS record is going to be about, I think, 20 or so hex characters long, or basically 20-something kind of characters long. It's a hash of the keys that are going to be at the child zone. So it's not a record. It's a record that's pretty easy to read, but it makes no sense. It's a little hard to type it in. RIPNCC has signed their zones, and you notice that there are already queries coming in for some of the DNSSEC records. RIPE's interface right now is through a DSR data attribute. So when they do their template processing, you just put it at a DSR data, and you get your DS record in there. EPP and DNSSEC, now we have EPP for the domain name registries. We have the DNSSEC going on in two different worlds. Quite a while it was realized that we want to have the domain name registries get DNSSEC in, so they put an extension to EPP. So we have this RFC that's out at 4310. It can take either the DS record or the DNS key record. Some people want choices about what they pass back and forth. One other parameter there, which I'll leave, the maximum signature time. It's hard to explain what that really means. And this is basically another extension to the EPP protocol. Now, what's most notable about DNSSEC data passing is that it's more frequent. Typically, if you get an address space from APNIC, you set up name servers, and you may never, ever change those name servers. If you never change the name servers, you never have to update the DNS data at all. You may never go back and change your name server records, your basically your WHOIS records. We never have to change for that. With DNSSEC, it has to be updated every so often because the DS records will actually kind of go bad over time. There's also increased bulk. The DS record is much less mnemonic. It's just a string of bits and characters that represent something that's somewhat random. So you're not talking about something that's easy to remember and type it in. It's not a catchphrase. It's just some characters. And actually, they're assigned to you by the software tools. You don't generate them yourself. So I have a quick demo that shows this actually works. What I'm going to show you is internal code we used to help develop the RFC. So this code, this is not the end user production, but this is to show you that this is actually a realistic scenario. And before I go into the demo, I'm going to have a bunch of windows up here. What I'm kind of highlighting here is the interaction between those two windows up there. The EPP is the protocol running between the two machines. Actually, it's all on one machine, two windows rather. I'm going to have in the lower left side of this what a user of the internet would the registrant would have. They're going to be working on their DNSSEC data. They're going to have files there. They're going to get the DNSSEC data from. They want to get that data into the DNS, so they would go up to the EPP client. Now, this would involve actually going through some intermediaries and some client software. The client would get that and then transfer the request over to the server, which will then, in our implementation today for demo purposes, uses a log file. I dump a file out. It said, here's a request an EPP has just gotten. I have another update client, which is doing NS update. We'll read that file and see that there's been an update and then update a running DNS server on my machine. So this has actually worked every time I've tried it, so I'm tempting fate here. Again, this window here is the person doing the work and trying to update the DNS. This window up here is the client that will pass this data across. And this, imagine this is kind of the major interface going back and forth. This would be what's sitting at the server side, like, for example, an APNIC in this case. We accept the requests. You'll see this thing register that there's some data to be put in there. And down here, this is a live running name server. And to kind of prove it, I'm going to do a dig. Child.tld. And I think if I ask for the SOA record, I'll get an error right now because I haven't registered the name. I'm going to cheat a bit to save some time. And these are the commands to set up the domain. And also I have to log in. This is the magic of demo. It looks like I'm actually putting a user ID and password into it. The truth is it doesn't matter what I type there. But the connection will start up. And now I'm going to paste in the three lines that will create the domain. I hope. There they go. Whew. Three for three so far. So now if I ask the same query, I now get an answer because I actually have that domain delegated. This is the uninteresting part of it. That's just setting up the domain name, and we're in registry space, so we don't want to listen to that. But the next thing in here is I've got this file, which is, this is the DS record, and this is the thing I have to convey from one side to the other. That's why I mean it's kind of bulky, it's kind of ugly. That's got to go back and forth. So what I need to do is just go back. I'm going to go back to my commands here to cheat again. And I need to ask to update child.tld and add the DS record. And there's a parameter to the side here. This is reading exactly what's in a file, the four parameters of a DS record plus a number which says, and don't sign this signature for more than 9,000 seconds in case there's some kind of a key is corrupted or something, and I don't want to have too much damage at the time. So I use that. And that has now updated the zone, the dynamic update. And now in this case, this looks the same, but I can also ask it for DNSSEC proof. And let's see. And the records are here. I'm getting the referral here. It's saying go to the child.tld, and here's the DS record saying that that's where it is now. This is not, recursion is not turned on. So basically, that just puts in the DS record, which is what I'm after in this. So the kind of suggestion I'm putting out here is that this EPP is a way of transporting this data across the interface. It could deal with some of the other different paths of how data has to get up there. Again, it's a suggestion right now. I don't know if it's going to fit into with the tools that Terry was showing too. That's another interface, and maybe that gets worked in too, that you want the DS record to come in through there. So, anyway. So, any questions?
So I'm not so catch up the EPP for DNSSEC EPP draft. So that this is question in the Scott's draft, the DNSSEC key is itself not a DS key, but your system is using DS key for the EPP.
This is actually based on Scott's draft. Scott's draft became the RFC 4310. And Scott and I worked on this last year, and he's seen this demo. We went through this. The way that his document treats the data transfer, you can send in the DS record, and as an optional attribute, you can send in the DNS key. Initially, when there was discussion about this in the IETF working group, a couple of people there said they preferred to send the DNS key back and forth as opposed to the DS key. But that was one set of opinion. A growing opinion was that the job of a registry is to publish the DS record. It's not the job of the registry to produce the DS record. So the whole idea was that the registrant produces the DS record, hands it over to the registry, and the registry just puts it out there. I mean, registries don't do any other processing of data that comes in here. I mean, of course, in APNIC, you're getting address space. That takes some thought and some thinking about how much space do you deserve based on your application. But after that, everything that you tell them you want to have published, it's a straight, they're just registering this belongs with that resource. So we were discussing in the mailing group, and more people in the working group, rather, really felt that the DS really is the unit of data that should go back and forth. We left the DNS key in there, and I asked people who wanted that there, show me a case where that was a better, approach than DS. And for the most part, the people that the challenge is kind of still out there. Most people that prefer the DNS key eventually change their mind without much, hitting them over the head. But the DS key actually won out in almost all of the discussions about that. So, sure.
Is your source code available?
No, actually, this code is internal code, and we haven't really thought about distributing it. It's more to demonstrate the concept of the protocol being plugged into places than a real tool for. Obviously, this tool is not very usable.
But the proof of concept code is interesting.
Yeah. It'd be interesting to see if we actually do come up with what we consider to be proof of concept code.
I'm going to do what every good chair never does and leave this room to your good selves, because I actually have a double schedule and have to go next door to run a PGP keying activity. Ah. So please do carry on in my absence.
No,
it's at 5:30. Yes, it's at 5:30 according to my schedule. Do you know what? I'm going to ignore the piece of paper and stay in this room till 6 o'clock.
Do what they did yesterday and get that microphone tuned into next door speakers. Terry, how do you do that again? Good time. I think we'd have to go back and decide if we want to distribute the code. This code was actually done just internally, and it was done primarily just before the RFC development. People have been asking me for the code. So far, I know this is maybe the only copy of it's on this disk, and maybe a backup server at home. So.
We do know that other people in our space have looked at extending EPP into namespace management. I mean, that is already going on. So your code might not be available, but we certainly do know this is a viable activity.
Yeah.
I wouldn't take this side comment we had about the viability of SOAP and BEEP as meaning this can't fly, but it is noticeable there was a lot of chatter on the wire there.
Yeah.
The other thing is that the bottom three windows were demonstrating DNS dynamic update.
Right.
And we have had discussions in APNIC about looking to improve on service. Now, it is way too early to make any public commitment, but we are considering the implications of offering live update. And the signal we're getting is that a part of the value add that would be a trade-off for the changes in resource management would be looking into providing full lifecycle update. If you make a change, we will commit to publishing as far as possible immediately. But it's too soon to say what shape that would take.
Yeah, dynamic update, there was a question about that in the workshop that was last week. And I actually surprised Bill Manning. He's saying, well, when will the TLDs adopt the dynamic update? I said, well, we had to a long time ago because of the size of the zones that we were running. You can't, you don't want to reload the whole zone every time you make a change. So dynamic update is actually a key element of most large zones that are being published out there already. That doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to see the update immediately. In the rules that we run by, we have to have a name out there. And offhand, I don't know what it is, but it's less than an hour, usually less than an hour. So to meet that, you had to go to dynamic update for at least the master, and then an incremental transfer for zone slave, master to slave.
We have the added complexity that with the shared zone issues in the RIR space, with ERX historical records, we would not be in a position to do dynamic updates in all zones that we have. So the commitment has to be mediated. Now, clearly, we'd like to discuss with the other registries ways to improve update cycle, but there will be spaces we manage where the update cycle might be 4 hours or it might be half a day. Now, the part Terry demonstrated that the update in our database in registry gives you immediate feedback, that's a locked-in commitment. We want to have turnaround that you know immediately our systems have an update of what you have. Yeah. But in real DNS space, propagation into the global DNS is actually not something even dynamic DNS update can control. And some of the diagnostic that we've been doing in the community has actually exposed that issue, that we make changes in DNS, and the test paths using DNS servers can be very, very strange. The caching properties of the deployed DNS can make proving something has been done really quite tricky. It's not quite live. There was one other comment I wanted to make to expand a bit on something Terry said. You were saying that you're doing PGP-based update at the moment. Well, at the point where APNIC felt it was able to ask for withdrawal of a mail-based update cycle, there would have to be, first of all, a public discussion and commitment from the membership that they're prepared for that, and secondly, some kind of an overlap. So you're certainly not going to have us turn up at the next meeting and say it's turned off tomorrow. But if you're in a position to think about your own in-house management processes, the stuff we're talking about here, XML parsing, using Perl methodologies, they're good things to be looking at now because it could put you in an extremely good place for ultimately replacing those processes. Yeah. But it's not on the horizon, but it's certainly over the horizon.
George, I want to make a comment too about if you're thinking about going to a more dynamic update of DNS that's seen by the outside world, you also have to tie in dynamic. You want to dynamically update the whois also.
Yes.
So this is a registry architecture question. That if you want to make the registry, how fast do you want the registry to flicker for one update to the directory database?
George has gone and opened up a kettle of fish. Yes. Something like that. I'll just mix my metaphors. It's all right. The dynamic update creates some interesting aspects. Firstly, at this point in time, whenever anyone submits a whois object for a domain object via AutoDBM, it's actually checked for sanity first. That means we actually check the name servers first. Now, checking name servers actually takes time. So if we go to a front-to-back dynamic system that a member can submit an object via an XML REST model, it's highly unlikely that we're actually going to check name servers, check that the zone is authoritative or the name servers are authoritative for the zone, and then give them a response. Why? Because we've got timeouts, we've got retransmissions, we've got all those sort of issues. So I would probably suspect that we're going to blindly accept what they give us and then punch that into the zone. However, that kind of disagrees with our current mode of operation. So there's a lot more discussion that needs to happen here. And that also does, as you've pointed out, suggest that whois should also be dynamic.
We've noticed that from our experience that,
That's not particularly the case in many situations. The RIPE software has NRTM near real time, but that's not quite perfectly dynamic, and that can be in fact lag. So there are issues abound.
To give you an idea of why I bring that up is there have been some cases where someone in the domain name space, I can go in there and register a domain name, get myself approved to send mail, send a whole lot of spam, and then withdraw my delegation. There's two ways to do this, too. Withdraw the delegation before the whois was ever updated with my identity so no one can ever look me up. That's one. That was one notice. The other thing that happens is, let's see, what was the other one? I just forgot the other one. The other one, too, is in the domain name. This is unique to domain names, too, where you pay for a name. There's also a period of time where you can say, oh, forget it, I didn't want to pay for that name. Buy a name, send the spam. Undo the name. So this is probably because whois is also not a historical record. It's what's out there currently, too. So I would say before dynamic update of DNS is pretty nice feature to have, especially when you get to DNS sec and you're getting to more realistic data actually meaning more data than especially in this case here where the DNS records would change, you want to keep things updated. But you've got to be careful not to lunge too forward with dynamic DNS without dynamically updating whatever else is out there to hold people accountable for what's in the DNS. By showing the dynamic update here, I'm not trying to say, look, it's a great thing. Dynamic update comes because of EPP. Yeah. It just works this way in our demo world. So any other